That's what I'm not sure, because I've heard both stories.
Well, you've heard both of them.
Yes, and that's what troubles me, because two things I can't quite figure out, because we've had an increase in Social Security taxes. You know, there's been some impact there. We have some impact. What the tax cut he's really talking about is a deacceleration of a tax increase, and I don't know how that effect plays. You follow me? Because the tax cut he's we're really talking about is less implementation of what they've already predicted, and that's what I don't know. Understand how it comes together. Is how are we going to tie those two and understand what are they going to have more money? I'm not sure. I think what they're saying is we aren't going to pay quite as much.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Still may pay more.
That's right. But I don't know how that affects our revenue. See, that's the.
It's the same thing we've had to tell our constituents about property tax relief.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a decrease in the increase of the rate of increase of.
Right.
Okay. I wanted to know just a couple of the other bills that are being considered in Congress. The interesting thing is already passed. There's a H.R. 1053, clever title. That's the 10-year, 5-year, 3-year accelerated depreciation schedules. Jones Conable, I think, is the other congressperson. Want to change the depreciation law to have a 10-year depreciation for buildings, 5 years for equipment, 3 years for cars. When you change the depreciation schedules, that's going to have an effect in Oregon. We're talking about excluded income again here as you're coming down to
that would probably really change it dramatically, would it not?
I don't know. People have talked to said all their revenue estimates back there are wild guesses, but the only way I'm going to get a revenue estimate here is to be tying in with their revenue estimates. Well, I would think it would have an effect.
Senator,
wouldn't that more or less just affect the corporate income?
Well, it's personal also.
It would have a more dramatic impact, I would think, on the corporate.
Yes, it will. It will be more in the corporate. Any private businessman that just fills out a personal income tax return that isn't incorporated, you'll see here in one of these forms that we report business income, and it would have an effect there.
The 10 was on buildings, the 5
yes.
was on
equipment, and the 3 was for cars. There have been other ratios kicked around too.
That would be an incredible, that would be an incredible change, because presently buildings are appreciated at 30 or 40 years.
I thought they were.
Depending on they are.
I don't.
You got a building?
I knew it was long term.
He's got a building.
You got to buy some more.
That's right. I will.
Get at it.
We've mentioned the Kemp Roth bill, 10% decrease in personal income taxes each year for 3 years, making it 30% cumulative. That would be a revenue producer for Oregon. There's two bills on the capital gains exclusion, more clever numbers. SB 75 says it would increase the current 60% exclusion up to a 75% exclusion. And H.R. 70 has a 70% exclusion instead of a 60% exclusion. Probably for about every, again, very rough. You're looking at maybe $10 million for every 10 percentage points on these capital gains. You know, that's going to be the effect on Oregon. Also, there are a number of bills in, I understand, on IRAs, the individual retirement accounts. And people can take a certain amount of money and set it aside for retirement. It's $1,500 now, I believe, and if that gets increased to $2,500 or $3,000, that's going to have an effect on Oregon.
That's like personal annuities?
Tax-deferred annuities.
Tax? Is that what they call them?
Well, some annuities qualify, and some do not. The old IRA was, I'm not sure you could actually call it an annuity, but they've liberalized the law now where it's some very handsome type annuities that are now yielding or paying directly 10 or 12% qualify.
I knew it would have an effect.
You can qualify now severance funds if you like in the credit union through a collective bargaining agreement type of severance funds. And you pay actually on it when you draw it out. Interest is tax free, so that's a completely isolated account until actual expenditure.
That whole area boggles me, but I'll be
isn't that, working with that. Isn't that just for those people that do not have another?
No, family? No, this is one that I thought so too, and frankly, collective bargaining, I just tell you that if you put it into a Taft-Hartley trust, which is automatically granted tax exemptions. You can then set that aside. The employer gets the tax exemption for the payment. In other words, he's getting a tax break on it. The individual receiving it does not have to pay tax, providing they don't draw it out until they terminate their employment. And the idea being they would give you a supplementary retirement. The reason they like it is that because of the employer's Unfunded Liability Act that Congress just passed, it's becoming more difficult to get in these multiple employer pensions, and that's what you're starting to see, and that is possible right now. It's just starting, but that's going to be a very big factor in the future, and it's separate and apart. You can have a pension plan as well as this.
I think that's really all I had on the federal. Oh, there was a Senate Finance Committee bill that had a 2-4-7-10 depreciation schedules. Generally a 35% reduction overall of the asset depreciation ranges that we have now. I'll try and keep you posted. Is what I find out, a few calls that we make back to Washington and what I can read in the Wall Street Journal. When I call the committees back there, they say, if you want information, the best way to get it is to watch the Wall Street Journal.
Ron.
That surprised me.
Ron, perhaps.
They don't put out press releases.
Perhaps as soon as possible, you could simply give the committee a listing of potential changes on the increase side and a decrease side. Just kind of split a piece of paper. These changes would affect our revenues in a negative way. These in a positive or additional revenue way. And so that we could then take that list as they mature and kind of be following it as a committee. And then it would also, I think, help in our minds. I know there's confusion in my mind as to which, as we went through this list, which way they're going to affect Oregon revenue. So if we could just, as you list them for us, as you bring a presentation on it, perhaps you could simply have them categorized that way, kind of the for and the again. And we can then...
I wonder if without... task out right at this point, if you could maybe ask the legislative counsel in the Department of Revenue to give us some general idea that if we chose to just freeze the steps, how complicated and what barriers do we run into? Okay. Do you mind doing that, Mr. Chairman?
No, that's fine.
That you're hearing from a lot of folks. U.S. World News report on about passing.
Subscription up?
Yeah, I think so. That must be it.
No, this is Senator Hannell will be late for the meetings. All I got.
We found that out already. We know that. Don't we? Is that all right, Mr. Chairman? If we maybe briefly have the Department of the Legislative Council tell us if we were to take that action, just how complicated is it?
Well, I think in that regard, Ron, that if we're going to, and I think we're going to need to look at that issue. Perhaps you could prepare a presentation for us, both historical as reasons why we went there, how come we attached, what are the pluses, the minuses, and then tie in revenue and council with the legal ramifications and the problems of severing from it. But we would need to know. We need a sense of history as to why we went that way. And
sure.
My involvement so far has not been deep in that regard because in 75, I didn't really know what was going on around here, quite honestly, when we did some of that sort of stuff. And I
your best work, man.
Yes. I found I could say things.
That's terrible.
I found I could say things then that I can't say now because I know better. And more people agreed with me when I was being irresponsible than when I'm responsible. You're right there. But if we need a sense of perspective as to why, what the good points are, because I think there are quite a few positive reasons, including simplification.
Well, the CPAs, people have,
yes.
They've got to know what it
was to simplify it and make it easier, and we had no idea the ramification. We saw that what happened when they started to make adjustments. We about panicked two years later.
As you can see, we've been in it and out of it and in it, and we need to know before we jump.
I will. So, I'll get a research report together on that.
Okay.
Use help from revenue and council. Try and lay out some of the options that that I can see that you'll be faced with if you want to incorporate federal changes or not.
Yeah, the committee can take that on as opposed to Senator Hanlon's Chapter 530, which I have now, we've mutually agreed that he'll take back to his committee and look at, giving us more time to look at this sort of thing, which I think is more of a direct revenue issue.
Mr. Chairman. Let the record show that I was only kidding, that you've done better work each session.
I've already made a note to inform the record to Evan.
I thought that was a pretty good singer. No, I just, Sam
came out for it.
Yeah, I understand.
I had no real argument.
I know you did.
That's what you do when you still can do irresponsible things.
Yeah. If you watch people in public office, their speeches become more boring. They say fewer dramatic things because they know they can't do all the things they once told people they could do.
On the other hand, those irresponsible marks you're accused of become responsible.
Historically,
okay. Become more responsible.
Well, let's get off this hangman's talk and back on the other side.
I want to point out just a few things on these computer printouts. There's really 8 pages together there. 6 of those are computer printouts. The first two, there's a 1 and a 2 in the upper right-hand corner with a circle around it. The first two are showing you 1979 tax data. These were the 1979 tax forms filed as of April 15th last year. First table says Table A in the upper left-hand corner. That's just the total dollars. Table B the on page 2 is showing you averages. People can usually tell more from the averages, except,
Excuse me, I guess I don't understand the first 2 lines on all of these.
Okay.
Negative greater than 10, negative less than 10, what are we talking about?
I'll go right across these columns a little bit. The first column where it says AGI level and then it has negative less than 10,
yeah.
And negative greater than 10. It's people with negative incomes. They'll report, they report a minus figure. In fact, that first line, it means a negative greater than $10,000 in the hole.
So if that's adjusted gross income.
That's adjusted gross income.
All right, thank you.
You had 2,000 returns, 2,462 returns that had over $10,000 worth of losses for this year. You know, those are kind of interesting. Usually, I think you probably have to be pretty well off to be able to sustain a $10,000 loss or something. That's to be some wealth,
A lot of bankruptcies this year.
That's been doing well.
An awful lot of
maybe people. That isn't very well off.
Yeah. But I mean, there's several.
I believe the President of the United States, when he was Governor of California, fell into that category at least 1 year and had some considerable publicity about it.
I didn't want you to think that's the same type of individuals that may be filing a single return in the $2,000 to $4,000 category. That might be the elderly.
Can't let that pass because all I can say is he didn't have the Bank of Georgia behind him. We're going to get to this.
Should we name the people he did have working for him on that deal?
Yeah. They're all in Washington now.
Yeah. Down in the bottom line in that first table, I just wanted you to see there's a little over a million. There's 1,131,000 returns filed. That's a good chunk. If you skip all the way over to column 11 at the bottom, you'll see there were $784 million worth of tax, of which the next column, there's $11 million of tax on preference income. That's the minimum tax in Oregon. There were tax credits of $15.9 million for a net of your $780 million.
I beg your pardon. Go back and tell us what preference income is.
Oregon has a minimum tax where you had a lot of people that are falling down in the loss categories that weren't paying any tax at all. And one of the big reasons is they're excluding 60% of their capital gains. For instance, they're only reporting part of the money, and they've got other losses that will offset positive income.
Okay, I understand.
And Oregon says if through capital gains or minimum or accelerated depreciation and all these things, that if you have preference income, we're going to tax part of it.
Senator Trow?
One question about that. Our minimum tax, is that roughly constant with what other states do? Are we low or high?
I'm not sure.
We invoked that 75 at the Christmas tree.
I believe it was 75.
And at that time, as I recall, not a lot of states were
doing it at all.
Were doing it, although it seemed like more and more that it was something that had started simply because of the number of exemptions. The increase in exemptions over the years had led to a significant number of people who had a lot of income but could report, in essence, a loss. And so I think it's a growing...
Is that something we can at least look at to see if it's the rate is realistic and possible?
Yeah.
I can do a little comparative study on that for you.
You know, while we're talking about staff work and that sort of thing, and I wish all the committee members were here, if a lot of times if we get into school finance and income tax and other taxes, it's popular to go ask the staff for a computer run or something like that. And when we're doing that, I don't say you always go through me, but we need to have a handle on that, because we have to realize that this staff is stretched between two committees, the House Committee and the Senate Committee. And I know last session they were, well, in some cases here all night, running runs, computer runs, and that sort of thing, which is, I mean, it's not that they shouldn't be done and that we should look at everything that's necessary, but we need to channel that work and make sure that we're not putting an unrealistic burden on them. I remember one day somebody hit the wrong button, didn't they, about 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning, and, yes, and had to reprogram the whole thing because it erased it, and part of that was just fatigue, I think.
Mr. Chairman, that wasn't me standing. It's a matter of courtesy. I think you should control that. Yeah. You should go through you, so you know where to direct it, and that way we all know that you've got it under control.
Go ahead.
That's all I need to say on table one. Table two is just for your general information. Usually when I'm looking at large bits of data, it's nice to look at averages. You know, see, you know, do things look average? You know, do they look normal? Can you trust the data? If you look down at the bottom of the table two, you know, you can see that, gee, the average exemptions for all these returns, 2.38. Average adjusted gross income was $14,991. Skip on across, really looking at average tax credit, $14. And the average tax due was $690 on column 14. If you wanted to look at various income groups, you know, you can just get a feel for what people are paying. Those last three columns are new to this table that weren't on the first one. Columns 15, 16, and 17. Shows you 15 shows you a tax divided by AGI. That's your... gives you kind of a clue to whether or not you're talking about a progressive tax or a regressive tax. I wrote some basic definitions that, again, most of you are probably familiar with up here on the board. But I'll show you that a progressive tax up at the top is a tax that as your income goes up, the tax as percent of income increases. So that says the tax is progressive. You've got high-income people that are paying a higher percentage of their income as tax compared to lower-income people. Paying a lower percentage of their income as tax. The reverse of that, you've got low-income people paying 10% of their income is taxed, and high-income people are paying 5%, you'd have a regressive tax. And if everyone's paying the same percentage of their income as a tax, you'd have a proportional tax. Oregon's tax system right now is progressive. And I don't...
Progressive to a point, or is it progressive all the way?
Well, I've got a... It's progressive all the way. I've got a little chart. Since I made the chart, I'll show you the picture. Nothing too dramatic. It just shows that the curve goes up all the way around. Oh, these are all the income. And actually, what this is just a plot of a column 15 on that table B. For all returns, you see that the lower income groups on the left-hand column, this is tax day, divided by AGI percent. Say at $10,000 adjusted gross income, you've got people paying about 4%. Of their income as tax. Then as you move on out here, you see that the percentage increases. Flattens out, the rate of increase declines.
Yeah.
It's gonna be asymptotic up here to, you know, 10%, actually 9%. There's a break in the curve, jumps from 100,000 to 250, so you should have two more pieces of paper out here to, you'll see that you get up to those 2 points. But it's a gradual gradually progressive.
Does it eventually just flatten out?
Yeah, I guess it's gonna flatten out.
Doesn't decline.
No.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Monroe.
The reason it doesn't decline is because your figures are based on adjusted gross income. And to more accurately perhaps reflect Senator Trost's line of questioning, if you used before tax income or some other kind of figure that did not take into consideration the fact that the very wealthy have at their are able to make use of more of the various kinds of deductions and exemptions, and so therefore their total taxes of their tax as a percentage of their total income might actually decline. Isn't that true?
It sure does.
But as long as you use adjusted gross income, and you've got progressive rate structure, it can't go down. It'd have to either go up or flatten out.
Ours would go down if we didn't have a federal tax limitation on there. If we got to the point, because of the progressive nature of the federal taxes, if you got, in fact, what you would have before this, you'd have higher incomes would be deducting so much of because of federal taxes that you would actually have that curve turn back down. Oregon did for a while, but our limitation that we have keeps it up there progressive.
Senator McFarland.
I want to know how that average that you told us on the adjusted gross income, how do we know from that 4.6 whether we're progressive or regressive? Don't we have to have this chart to know? That one figure won't tell us whether.
I'm not.
Well, whenever you.
The 4.6 got me.
Yeah, whenever you pointed this out to us, you said that tells us whether it's regressive or progressive. I understand how the chart tells us that. But I don't understand how that one figure.
Oh, and no, and column. I was looking at column 15, the whole thing. That column 15 is what I used to plot the points, and it's that was a tax to AGI.
Okay, the whole column. There.
Yeah, you got to use them all. That's right.
All right,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, the one number won't do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Adjust with AGI at $30,000. We're under 5%.
Okay, I've got it right at 5%. Okay. Right, 30 to 32. Or,
then well, when, yeah, that's people, a break point. When we've been saying that we've lost some elasticity because people have reached the maximum income, is that because the rate of growth in percentage terms is slower at higher incomes? Surely that doesn't mean that people have topped that we don't have a lot of people topping out, because you're up there, you're talking $100,000 adjusted gross income to get up near the top, and we heard a lot of that during the special session. Well, all these people got up at 10% or something, and so we're not getting that kind of elasticity. But this chart would tell me, except for the slowing of the growth in the rate, that can't be true. Because suddenly we didn't have 25% or even 10% of our population topping out. You don't even have MDs up there.
Moved over, I think the next column 16, is better for what you want. Column 16 shows you tax to taxable balance. And it's a taxable balance, which is the base to which you apply the rates. And you see that people are, you know, fairly quickly getting up there to, well, you're never going to reach, like you do reach 10%, the very 500,000. But they are, that's.
Where's the. Sure, go ahead.
What he's interjecting here, the governor's explanation of that is that is exactly happening because of incomes going up. And I think what he's trying to say, if you look at, you see a topping out there in the average percentages, if you look at column 16, as he points that out, that again gives us some avenue to look at if we're going to adjust those rates accordingly. Because even though the chart doesn't reflect that, if you take the taxes of AGI or taxes of total balance, you're getting a topping out of the way that's not, even though the chart doesn't reflect it. At least that's what I think you're telling us.
Well, that's what I hope you're
telling.
Well,
it looks to me that the rate of growth is in the $30,000 to $40,000 range in percentage terms is the same. I was under the assumption that the average income, adjusted gross income in the state of Oregon, was relatively low, and that the number of people making an adjusted gross income of of even $50,000 and above was a relatively small percentage of the total population. I mean, an extremely small percentage, one that baffled me. Now, I don't see a slowness in the rate of growth between 30 and 40. That doesn't appear to grow slower than between 18 and 30. How are we topping out? You're still incrementally every $2,000 or $3,000, you're gaining a 10% or so in interest, whether you go down in the 20 to 30 bracket or above.
Well, I don't think the elasticity has fallen off all that much.
Okay.
First of all,
don't see it.
Tendency is for that to happen as inflation pushes people up more.
But do you think that's happened? Is that going to affect? Have we grown because of inflation and wages going up because of those inflationary spots? Is that going to affect our tax collection as dramatically in the future as it has in the last few years? Is what really we got to know.
Probably not.
That's what they're arguing.
Let me ask you this about if we index the rates, would this change the way this chart looks very much? Would it change the progressivity of the income tax?
Oh, it shouldn't. I guess my initial thought is that I'm not sure how inflation is affecting the various income groups.
Sure.
You know, and that's going to change it. Ideally, I think if you're indexing things, you want to not affect the structure anymore. You can, depending on if you index the whole tax system, you know, like dividing everybody's income by the CPI or something.
So you can't argue that indexing would make it more progressive or less progressive.
Well, the argument is made that indexing over time is a progressive action because that the lower incomes have fallen behind. By not indexing the standard deduction and the personal exemption in the past, and even though the federal government's made these big changes, that we are penalizing the lower incomes more than the higher incomes. So I think most economists will argue that it is a progressive move to index for those lower incomes. That's if you're looking just at the tax structure and not worrying about expenditures, not worrying about what you're doing with state budgets and all, just the structure.
But indexing the rates generally does lessen the elasticity.
Yes, it will. Only other thing I want to mention on these tables, those first two, now that was for all returns, and we want to know what's happening with all the returns, if there's a lot of garbage in it, meaning there's a lot of, you've got single taxpayers, joint taxpayers, non-residents, part years. I added a few more tables for you in the last two.
Excuse me, just a minute.
Senator Monroe.
Before we get off of these lines 15 and 16, let me see if I'm correct in my observation. Line 15, the reason that the figures don't go above 8.4% is because that figure does include, well, the federal tax exemption would come off of that, right?
Yeah, that's getting down to your taxable balance.
So your federal tax exemption becomes a factor in that, and that's why, for example, at the very top level, it actually regresses from 8.4 on the 300 to 500 to 8.3 in the 500 plus.
The federal taxes are limited. There's a limitation as to how much federal tax you're taking off, so it shouldn't have too much effect up at that level.
Okay, but then over on the tax to taxable balance, that's taxable balance. You've already subtracted the federal tax before you get to your taxable balance.
That's true.
And so that's why the figures go right up to the maximum rate of 10%. And to answer the chairman's comments about the flattening out, it appears to me there is a rather significant flattening out. For example, if you look in the first bracket of 0 to 10,000, you find a change of some 2.3% or a better than a 50% increase in the tax rate from 0 up to the 10,000 rate, from 4.3 to 6.6. Whereas you go from the 6.6 to 7.5 between 10,000 and 20,000, for an increase of less than 1 point, or, you know, what, some 15% roughly, and then you go from 20 to 30, and you only increase 0.7 points. You go from 30 to 40, and you increase 0.5 points. From 40 to 50, you increase 0.3 points. From 50 to 60, 0.2 points. So it does significantly flatten out.
It does, but I thought what I was hearing was not that we had simply flattened out that way, but that people had reached a large number of people were reaching a maximum.
You're saying you get more and more people every year reaching a maximum. And
one of the things that I'm thinking now is perhaps instead of people moving up in the last couple of years, we may have had a lot of people moving down. And that
eight, because of that top.
Well, not necessarily because of the top, but because of the economy. And that people are actually paying on less income. Again, not actual less income, but the rate of growth of income is much less than it has been in the past, and that affects the elasticity or the figures as much as the fact that we're topping out or that we're going to the increase, incremental increase in the rate is less in the upper income brackets.
But you see, if you take a person, say at a 40,000 to 45,000 income, their average tax rate.